I guess I'm going to be talking about a little bit different aspect of the risk and uncertainty that is covered in this symposium that has to do with the policy aspects that EPA and other regulatory agencies that end up being based on uncertain risk assessment, and then how do we work with research data. The team that are listed here as co-authors are working between ARS, a group of universities through the EPRI network that Warren Dick runs at Ohio State, and the ARS researchers and EPA are cooperating and conducting research on the risk assessment for beneficial use of this fluidized gas desulfurization gypsum. And although we're doing great research and we're making great progress, when we get to talking with EPA about I got to find how to move this ahead. Come on. We have a whole new set of problems about how we're going to decide what's acceptable. So research has shown substantial benefits. The ones that we know about, traditional use of calcium, gypsum as calcium fertilizer, increasing need for sulfur fertilizers, the evidence of improved water infiltration, reduced erosion when you add gypsum to the surface. There are studies using gypsum to reduce phosphorus in runoff. Subsoil aluminum toxicity can often be greatly reduced with gypsum, a heavier application. And, of course, the traditional siliceous kind of things. When we looked at the potential benefit of FGD gypsum, we have to keep in mind that 10, 15 years ago, this was a mixed product that had all of the fly ash and all of the other things that they could get into the solid to get it out of the exhaust. And the old products, some of them were so contaminated, they got boron toxicity in plants when they tried to put it at a disposal rate. On the other hand, if they'd only used it at a simple fertilizer rate, it would have been a very good product for alfalfa establishment, where you need some limestone. The industry took to heart the idea that they needed to clean it up, so they actually changed the way they did their exhaust treatment. So they removed the fly ash first, and then removed the sulfur dioxide. So when we did that, come on. I wanted to show this one, which shows that the extremely high boron level in one of the old coal combustion byproducts. These are the old ones. Now the newer ones, these are all from plants that use this new sequence of removing SO2 after fly ash. You'll see that, for instance, arsenic was the 95th percentile of the population was 10.1 ppm arsenic. The 95th percentile of background soils is 12, so it's not so unusual as to make you worried. Selenium, because of the cleanup, selenium was one of the very few that ended up being substantially higher. Boron is higher. On the other hand, with a fertilizer application rate, the boron is hardly even a good fertilizer rate anymore. I mentioned the selenium only because it's one of these things where you say, oh my God, selenium's so much higher, that's going to be dangerous. But then the fact is that FGD is calcium sulfate. The sulfur inhibits the uptake of selenate by plants, and so we don't have high uptake of selenium, even in the old days when we had the higher selenium gypsums. So the prediction that because you have a higher concentration, you're going to have a higher risk, is just, again, one of those where just you ignore the facts of the science, that the competition with sulfate completely alleviates the risk of selenate in these cleaner gypsums. I'm going to focus most of the rest of the talk on arsenic because considerations at EPA are being driven by some proposed changes in the cancer slope factor for arsenic in humans, which would essentially make it so there's nothing in the world you'd be allowed to touch anymore. They already have been using a 0.43 milligram arsenic per kilogram they call it soil screening level. If it's above that level, then you do more risk assessment. That's for 10 to the minus 6 cancer risk. And it's based on children eating soil, 200 milligrams a day. How do you stand and say that number is where we should say risk starts when the background soils, 95th percentile, is 2 to 12 ppm? Many people question that 0.43 number because we searched into the development of the number, but EPA, in a recent proposal, has suggested they need to increase the cancer slope by 17-fold, which would then take the 17-fold lower for the soil screening level. I mean, how much more below background do you have to go before you know maybe there might be something wrong with the way that they developed the numbers? I'm going to tell you a little bit about how they got to that and why it might be wrong. Actually, the public comment period on this is continuing, and the Science Advisory Board comment period is open. Actually, the data that the IRIS people were using, the drinking water people were using to develop this, are so faulty that the industry has sued EPA on the basis of EPA's Data Quality Act. And in my judgment, they've got a very good justification for that. Again, background. You know, we all know soils are variable. Lots of factors affect the natural content of arsenic in soils. I don't think any of these represent contaminated areas. This is, again, is always a statistical distribution, going from sands to clays, going from unmineralized parent to mineralized parent material. The USGS Smith data set shows the numbers I was showing, again, a median of 5 ppm compared to a SSL of 0.43. In Florida, because of, toxicologists with excessive concern about arsenic, Lena Maad did very good sampling of soils and working out methods and so on. And let's see if I can find my thing. Okay. You'll see that she stresses here that the soil screening number, but the Florida Department of Environmental Protection uses a 0.8 as a residential use land number. And there have been cases in Florida when soils above 2 ppm were declared hazardous and had to be removed, which gets to be complicated. The other half of this is where is the risk? The risk is, again, lifetime cancer, but it's based on children eating arsenic that's being absorbed in their gut and ending up then potentially reacting in the body. So I'll show you in a minute some data that show that 40 to 100 ppm arsenic in soil cause no increase in urinary arsenic in children. If you ignore the adsorption, there are soils with 1,000 ppm arsenic that are lower risk than a Florida sand with 20 ppm. The last one on the bottom there is actually arsenic may be essential for living organisms. There's a lot of good papers about it, but it hasn't yet made the acceptance list at the NRC. So because it's not essential, then you can insist on zero, even though in a natural world there is no zero. Here's data from a study of urine in children living in an area where there was smelter pollution. And so there were children with much higher, these are high arsenic in the dust and in soil. And as you go further away, you get lower and lower. But until you get somewhere above 100 ppm, there's no increase in urinary arsenic. Here's the urinary arsenic in several studies. And again, until you get somewhere above 40, maybe above 100, there's no increase in urinary arsenic, either bioavailability or true exposures. Studies on bioavailability, for instance, this work of Nick Bostas' team, shows that if it's present in a high iron soil, you have an iron mineral, scorodite, formed by adsorption and then further reaction with the iron oxides. And the more iron there is, the lower the bioavailability. So that not all arsenic in soil is of equal risk, as opposed to the assumptions at EPA. Unfortunately, arsenic has been used in agriculture for 100 years, maybe longer. We have both poultry and swine manures that are high in arsenic because they add feed additives. We have orchards with very high lead arsenate accumulation in soils. Defoliants, herbicide use, arsenic in tick dips, and gold mine waste. Think of California here, the old Sutter mines up there. Millions of hectares are contaminated by the gold miners of 1849. The serious problems with the cancer slope factor, it comes down to that some of the wells in Taiwan where the population was that they used to base it were artesian wells high in arsenic, and some were shallow wells low in arsenic. Any village had both. They categorized the villages on the basis of the median arsenic. So some people had high arsenic exposure and cancer risk, and others not. And they did it on the median. Immediately, you would say, you've got to throw those data out. You can't rely on it at all. We have some Western U.S. populations with 50 to 100 micrograms per liter of arsenic with no cancer incidence and significant populations. So it is complicated. So just a couple comments about gypsum. Gypsum is, because of the change in technology, is becoming a much better resource. I don't know whether it's cost-effective to apply it in fertilizer programs, but some places it's honestly needed, and we're going to see it being used commercially. The dioxins and the pHs are not significant in that product. We have the issue of arsenic is overwhelming. Right now, EPA is unable to make a decision because they can't decide what to do about arsenic in drinking water. They're putting off every decision about coal combustion byproducts, about foundry sand, about biosolids, other things based on that. I'll close because I know I'm at the end. I want to just, the take-home message, when you try to make policy out of good science, sometimes it gets really complicated when EPA scientists start to monkey with the data. I say that the toxicologists can do some of they make the most opaque models that you have to have the computer pay $100,000 to a consulting firm to be able to test what the hell their data even show. And that becomes then a very difficult thing for the society to know whether EPA is doing the right thing or not. Sometimes we can have enough experience in our data to challenge. And certainly the arsenic things are being challenged by many, many interests in our society and even lawsuits. And I was saying with somebody else this morning, in the end, the things are all going to be settled in court. They're going to ignore our science and our measures of uncertainty. But I like transparency. And I think showing uncertainty and making transparent models, applying them to the real world is where we have to go. Thank you.
Thank you.